lies sleeping in the palm of your hand.
Okay, welcome everyone to the Planning Commission meeting of Monday, March 24th, 2014. I would like to note that Chair Daniels will not be in attendance this evening as he has a potential conflict of interest with item B1. So I'll call the meeting to order. Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance. Ready? Begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Will the clerk please call the roll?
Thank you. Commissioner Dressler?
Here.
Commissioner Anand?
Here.
Commissioner West?
Present.
Vice Chair Solomon?
Present.
Chair Daniels?
Is absent.
Okay. Now is the time for our public forum. This is the time for any member of the public to address the commission on an item that is not on tonight's agenda. Do we have any speaker slips, Madam Secretary?
No speaker slips.
Okay. But I'll just wait a moment. No. Looks like nothing for the public forum. Staff, are there any amendments or adjustments to tonight's agenda?
No, there are not.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. Now for the first item, will the clerk please read our first item into the record?
Item A1 is the administrative agenda. It's the Planning Commission minutes for the meeting of March 10th, 2014.
I'll move to adopt the minutes.
Any discussion of the minutes? No?
Nope.
Okay. All right.
I'll second that.
Thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Okay. 4-0. Thank you. And now item B1. Will the clerk please read the next item into the record?
Item B1 is a public hearing. It's case number 12-086 RZVTM to rezone property from DR1.8 to 20R1 and create 7 residential lots. Harvest Hill Ranch Project, 880 Cambridge Drive, APM 069-620-044.
Thank you. Well, first we'll have a presentation from staff, and then the applicant and his or her team will address the commission, and then the public will have an opportunity to speak. We request the public limit comment to 3 minutes, and it would be helpful to not repeat any information already stated by another speaker. May I have the staff report, please?
Thank you, Chair Solomon. Good evening. As we know, we're here for the Harvest Hill Ranch project, and it's an application for a rezone of DR1.8, as it's currently zoned, to 20R1, and then a vesting map to subdivide the property into 7 lots, 6 net new, for development of 1 single-family dwelling per lot. So this is a vicinity map showing North Cambridge Drive north of Cathedral Oaks and just south of North Patterson Avenue there. It's interesting to note that the eastern boundary of this property is the border of the city. So just to the right of the screen there is county property or county jurisdiction. But as you can see, it's a very similar setup of residential subdivision as it is in our city here. So here's the zoning distribution on the left as it stands now in the neighborhood. As you can see, most of it is 20R1 in surrounding the property. In the county there, to the east or to the right, it's 15R1, so similar. Then the right image is what the applicant has proposed to bring it into 20R1, which, as you can see, is pretty consistent with the surrounding neighborhood. So here's the project frontage along Cambridge Drive. This is looking north. That's the southerly driveway access to the property. You can see that the property is a bit elevated from the street. And then here's another look, looking north a little bit further north along Cambridge. And you can see some of the existing tree cover and shrubs that are largely going to remain on site. And then for this is the vesting tentative map plan. It might be easier to see it on big page 150 in your packet. It might be a little hard to see on the screen, but this is how he the applicant proposes to subdivide the property into seven lots. The existing dwelling on the lot is on proposed lot number two. And then this plan shows a number of the outbuildings that are proposed for removal, as well as it shows the existing adobe barn and tractor shed that are proposed to be retained on the property. This VTM also shows the access plan. There are two access roadways off of Cambridge Drive. The southerly access, which is on the left side of the screen here, serves lots 1 through 4, and then the more northerly access serves lots 5 through 7. There's not continuous flow from one side of the property to the other, as you can see there. And the fire department has taken a look at this VTM and is indicated that the road widths and the turnarounds are compliant with their regulations. That's important to note as well. Okay, looking on to general plan and zoning ordinance consistency analysis, staff found that the project conforms with related policies of the general plan, and that's contained in your packet as exhibit number 5 of attachment number 1. That's big page 139 for a more in-depth review of that. The general plan land use designation for the property is currently residential single-family dwelling. So the proposed zone change is bringing it more into line with what the general plan land use designation is already designated at. The application is consistent with the allowed uses and standards in both residential single-family and R1 out of the zoning ordinance. The proposed minimum lot size is 20,000 square feet, and the lots range in size from approximately 20,000 square feet to 40,000 square feet, with an average size of about 29,000 square feet. In the surrounding neighborhood within the city limits adjacent to the property, minimum lot sizes are 20,000 square feet, and the surrounding neighborhood outside the city limits to the east of the property is about 15,000 square feet. And then this table just shows some of the zoning standards currently in for R1, and the proposed project with approval of the rezone would be compliant with all of those standards for setback, building height, and parking requirements. Incidentally, also there's the floor area ratio guidelines that would be subject to all these properties. But the buildable envelopes for each of the properties would be well within those guidelines. So the CEQA analysis that we did was a mitigated negative declaration. We found two areas that had potentially significant effect on the environment. However, they could be mitigated. Those two areas are biological resources and noise. Specifically under biological resources, the areas of nesting birds and native and mature specimen trees were of some concern. And then for noise, it was the construction noise. So the mitigation measures that we set forth in the MND for biological resources, for the nesting birds, we would require prior to grading that the applicant provide a nesting bird survey. And that survey would establish a number of things, breeding and roosting status of any active nests. It would designate a 300-foot buffer around any nests. It would recommend it would make recommendations to minimize impacts during construction. And then we have the tree protection replacement plan that would protect the trees. That would be required prior to grading as well. That would identify and locate all the trees that to be protected, what those protection measures would be, and then if there were any trees removed or damaged, what the replacement ratio would be of those trees. So that includes, again, native trees as well as mature specimen trees. Then on to noise. This is pretty standard mitigation measures that you see for any construction site. We limit construction hours in a project like this to 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. With no construction on weekends or holidays to try and limit the noise to the surrounding neighborhood. Any stationary construction equipment would have to be that produces noise in excess of 65 dBA would have to be shielded, and any noise that is produced would have to be attenuated to no more than 65 dBA at the project boundaries during construction. And incidentally, the MND does describe that at project build out, when the subdivision is built out, that it is not anticipated to make any overly noisy, anticipated to be overly noisy. So this is really just a construction mitigation measure. Okay, so on to the findings. We made these three findings for approval of the project. First, we found that there are no significant effects of the project on the environment based on the analysis done in the MND. And we found that the MND properly assesses the environmental impact of the project. We did receive today, on the last day of the comment period, a comment letter from the Audubon Society of Santa Barbara, and that should be included in your packet. We had made an errata sheet to address some of their comments about nesting birds, and so we believe that it addresses their comments satisfactorily. The findings for the rezone, staff found that the application creates consistency with the general plan through the land use designation of residential single-family dwelling, and that the project is compatible with the surrounding neighborhood, which is almost exclusively residential single-family. And then for the vesting tentative map findings, we found that it's consistent with the Subdivision Map Act, as well as, like I said, consistent with the general plan, and there are no significant impacts to the environment. And the architectural guidelines that were provided by the applicant were reviewed, given we completed conceptual review of the architectural guidelines on November 9th. The vesting map, Going to single-family residential, again, it has a similar lotting pattern to the surrounding neighborhood. It's would be one unit per lot, and the lot coverage for each lot would be similar to the surrounding neighborhood. So I think all those things combined led us to approve the finding, make the findings for vesting map. So it is our recommendation that the Planning Commission adopt the resolution recommending that the City Council adopt the mitigated negative declaration and mitigation monitoring and reporting program. The City Council approve a rezone from DR 1.8 to 20 R1, and that the City Council approve a vesting tentative map for a 7-lot subdivision. And that concludes my presentation. I can take questions if there are any. Otherwise, I think the applicant would like to discuss some of the architectural guidelines that he's proposed.
Yeah, we were hoping to hear from the applicant. Yeah. Thank you.
Good evening, Madam Chair, members of the Commission.
My name is Rich Ridgway. I'm a local home builder. My company is Investec, and I've been building homes in the community for over 30 years now. So I'm aware of the process, and I do know how to deal with the different departments, the utility companies, the public works, the fire department. So I hope to convince you that I won't fumble through this process. I do know how to go through it. My wife and I bought the property about a little over two years ago, I guess November of 2011. And so we were pretty excited. The property is a really nice piece of property. And so we got our consultants together, and we hired every consultant you could imagine. We had the arborists and biologists and hazardous people, historians, soils engineers, geologists, all the usual that you're used to seeing. And so we kind of formulated a plan and thought, since the property was zoned DR 1.8, which in this part of the community, that's usually a clustered project, we thought that's probably not appropriate for the neighborhood. Everything else is single family. So we asked if we could do a rezone. Looked at the 20 R1 and figured that's a good density. Everything around it to the west and north is 20 R1, to the east is 15 R1, and much of 12 R1. So our density is very consistent. And then we looked at how to lay out the parcel, and we could fit, one of the plans had 10 lots, but it was too tight. We would have had to remove a lot of the structures that are so neat on the property. So we looked at a 9-lot and an 8-lot, and the way it really laid out the best was with 7 lots. And so we have lots from 20,000 feet, but most of them are 3/4 of an acre up to an acre, so bigger than the rest of the neighborhood. And then we started laying out what would be our home sites. This is a standard subdivisions and a vesting map, so we really didn't have to go to this step this early by designing the homes, but we felt it would give the city comfort if we came to the design review board and went through our concept and our theme. And so we've developed a ranch theme, and if you've all seen some of the floor plans and elevations in your package, they're very consistent to the existing old ranch house that we have on the property that we want to save. And that old ranch house is on lot number 2. First part of the home was built in 1895, and then over the years, 3 or 4 additions later, it is what it is today. And it's actually a neat house on the best part of the property. Whoever started building it there figured the views and the site, this is the spot to be. So we kept lot number 2 as the old house, and we're not going to be doing any construction on that. It's nice enough as it is. But then we laid out the rest of the lots around it. We're retaining an old adobe barn. The man that owned the property before us, he actually bought it in 1947, and he was a horseman. And so he had ponies and then horses that he showed. And when we first bought the property, in his tack room, there were trophies and ribbons, and he really, really was serious into horses. And even when he got older and then subsequently passed away, the property was used still as a horse ranch. When we bought it, there were 7 horses that were being boarded on the property, some in the existing stable and some in corrals. But those were a little scary to me because they're big animals, and when they get out and run around, there's liability and issues. So we decided to stop the horse operation, and he relocated, or several of the families relocated to other spots to take care of their horses. But anyway, we did study all the different sites and all the views, and we think we have sited the homes in the logical spots. we've done, Brian has prepared about 100-page MND, so we've studied really all of the issues. We do have the nesting raptor issue, which there are conditions that tell us if we find something that we need to stop work, and I'm willing to live with all of the 116 conditions. But the raptor issue was the one main one, and construction noise, which unfortunately that goes along with construction, and I'll do my best with the neighbors. They're not here tonight. At the DRB hearings, we had a full house, and we worked hard with them. We had three different meetings, and there were concerns from several of them, and we redesigned homes and moved things around a bit, and I think that this might be evidence that there's not a lot of community opposing it. As Brian said, we developed some architectural guidelines. We did that because we want to be consistent throughout the site on the style of the homes. And so we actually designed them all, and the DRB has looked at several of them really closely, and some of them they didn't see the elevations. But we have since developed that, and we will be back with each house to see the design review board and work through any issues that they have. But we've given them, here's a palette of materials that will be used, roof products that will be used. We've laid out on the landscaping. Since these lots are rather large, we've had some envelopes developed around the homes that would have landscaping more similar to the rest of the neighborhood. But then we have large buffers around the lots that would stay more native. They would have the oak trees, some roofs or toyon, but something that's native and low drought tolerant. But we have given the flexibility for some orchards because historically the property was an orchard. With the water, I'm sure everybody's concerned about that. We had two large agricultural meters, and the water district has gone and done their normal calculations and have determined that we had a historical use of about a little over six and a half acre feet, and the new project, once developed, will use about 2.9, I think. So we're using less than half what has historically been used there. So we also have a well. The well is off the property on a neighboring parcel, and the ranch had been irrigated with that somewhat, but it has a really high iron content, sulfur content. The water district doesn't want to use it for production. I'm donating or giving it back to the water district. I think they're going to tell me, no, please abandon it, but that might change if they want to use it to watch it for monitoring purposes. But the well is off-site. So this property has another interesting feature. The property owner was involved in the right suit, which was the big lawsuit through the 70s and 80s. And so it has special adjudicated rights, which means it has to serve this property and is not subject to their normal ordinances. So I'm in a good position water-wise. Sanitary district, they serve it currently, so don't need to annex that. Have worked with Steve Wagner in Public Works for the design of the drainage system. It's pretty intricate because even just, 2 weeks ago, I think, regional water quality came down and put a whole new layer of requirements on development, and we have since met with the people in flood control and Public Works, and so we fortunately have a lot of land around the lots, and so there's area for us to do the new mitigations. So we treat it, then we filter it through the ground, put it in underground containers, let that leach in, then any overflow goes into French drains that run along the topography. So the drainage system is pretty intricate, but I think that we are able to accomplish what the new regulations require. For affordable housing, I know that I need to meet that, but because we want to build single family on large lots, I'm hoping to pay an in-lieu fee, and I'll work through that with Brian when the time comes. Because normally when I build a project, we actually provide it on site, but with this kind of zoning and large lots, it doesn't really work. So hoping to do the in-lieu fee. The one thing that I hope to do, and I'll work with Brian on this, the old adobe barn, it's really a neat old structure, and we want to keep it and rehabilitate it. And we're not expanding it. We're just going to work with what's there. But I know that in this next, if I get approvals, in this next 9 months plus, when I'm working towards getting a map recorded, my wife and I would love to be able to do that work. And so I'll work with staff to see if that's possible. That it's not a new structure. It's there. It's got water in it. It's hose bibs. And so it does not have sewer at this point. So that's one issue I'll need to work with staff and with the sanitary district on. So I think that is my presentation. I want to thank Brian. He's been really helpful through this process. It's complicated, as you know, and he's done a great job guiding me through it. And I think we have a project that you all can be proud of, and my wife and I are looking forward to building. Thank you. And
thank you.
I can answer questions.
Thank you, Mr. Ridgway. Very nice presentation. Can you just stay with us for one moment, and I'll check in with my fellow commissioners and see if there are any questions for you directly? Anybody? Not yet?
I do. Okay.
Thank you, Meg.
Mr. Ridgway. Curious here, I'm looking at your map showing your landscape area 1 and 2. What is the ratio of one to the other? So I'm curious how
you
much
know,
is going to be.
It varies per lot. If you look at lot number one, which is the on the left side, that lot's an acre. Is there a laser, or can I walk to the? Okay, you can see there are established building envelopes. In most cases, my buildings are well within the building envelope, but in those green areas is where a more normal, now it still would be drought tolerant, it still would have very little lawn in it, but that would be more similar to the rest of the neighborhood where you could manicure and prune and do what people do in their yards. The areas that you see along the west side and on that entire south edge and even south of the roadway, that's all in what we call the buffer area number 2, and it's more native oaks and ruce and toyon and stuff that will be drip irrigated and not manicured.
Right, I understand. Yeah, I can read the map. I'm just curious. It looks to me here like the landscape area 1 is quite a bit larger. I was just curious. It might be like 2-to-1 or 3-to-1, just eyeballing
depends
it.
Depends on the lot.
Yeah,
I think lot number
lot.
1, mm-hmm. probably the manicured area is quite a bit smaller than the surrounding buffer area because the
right.
land goes way down below the road. So lot 1's probably not representative, even though that's a lot more area 2 than 1.
So it'll vary, yeah.
Yeah, those
so,
going along Cambridge,
mm-hmm.
Up top around the home, you would be able to do the normal landscaping. That buffer, which is probably 50, 60 feet at least, is going to be in the more native.
Gotcha. Yeah, I think this is a good approach in general. But are you going to be actually installing the landscape, or are the people who buy the homes going to be installing the landscape?
I am going to be.
Okay.
I hope to actually complete the homes with the landscaping and then tell people you can purchase, or if you don't want it, next. So I'm
right.
not going to be customizing everything. So each time I come back for a house, I will have a landscape plan reviewed by DRB.
Gotcha. Okay, so I'm going to hold you to that on the not okay. very much lawn. I'd love to see no lawn, but I understand, I know how emotionally involved people are with their lawns. So that's something you'll have to work on with the DRB. Thank you.
Any other questions? Okay, thank you so much for your presentation. Okay, fellow commissioners, any questions for staff this evening? Please.
Okay. So just looking for a little more clarification on the stormwater system. This subterranean storage and gutter release along Cambridge Drive is a last case. Is that is up to par for the new state standards?
Chair Solomon, yes. That originally when it was submitted originally, it was prior to the new standards. But then, yes, the applicant has brought them up to the current standards that went into effect March 6th.
Okay, because I thought the standards were that there would be, that the drainage pattern of the new development could not exceed, as far as runoff could not exceed in the new development, the current state, which that's the new law. And if I'm seeing that there's metered release along the gutter in Cambridge Drive, then that's telling me there is actually runoff from this property, which I don't believe is actually part of that law.
And we have Marty Milan here that may be able to provide some more detail on some of those regs. That would be great.
Welcome, Ms. Milan.
Good evening, Chair Solomon and Commissioner West. With regards to the new stormwater regulations, the previous ones were that there could not be any more runoff from a site than pre versus post of any construction of any project. The current standard is now that depending upon the size of your project, you have different tiers. There are four different tiers that are associated with the project. And each tier has different criteria. Tier one, smallest, under things under 5,000 square feet, remodel or anything like that. Essentially, it talks about that you would have to incorporate bioswales and, you know, best management practices of that nature, roof drains to lawn areas. And then the second tier level has a little bit more in-depth requirement, which it focuses on a certain amount of distinct type of cross-section for groundwater infiltration so that it goes through a landscaped, composting, rock filter type of scenario. In the third tier, you get into the larger projects that would require that the 95th percentile storm is retained or kept on the site permanently, but it does allow for a certain amount of incremental runoff from the site. And then on the fourth tier, I'm drawing a blank and I apologize, but each of the second tier has to impose the first tier, the third tier has to impose the first and second tier as well, the fourth tier is required to do all of them. So actually, yes, you could have some runoff from a site in the new criteria.
So the new criteria have actually become more flexible?
In a way.
In a way. Okay, because I wasn't aware of that, so that's really good to know. Great. That was my question. Thank you.
All right. Any other questions? Okay. I would like to just at this point request disclosure of any site visits or ex parte communication.
I did a site visit.
I also did a site visit and had a meeting with the applicants, and no information was discussed that was not included in the public record.
I neither visited the site nor met with the applicants.
Thank you. And I myself visited with the applicants at the site. So I close that. Any other questions for staff? Otherwise, I'll close for deliberations.
I do believe we need to open for public hearing. I'm not sure if we have anybody, but we should open it.
Yeah. Madam Clerk, do we have any slips?
No, we do not.
Okay. Well, in that case, we'll go to deliberations. Thank you. All right. Any discussion?
No, you go ahead. Okay. Well, you know, I wasn't here last week when we received a presentation from the Goleta Water District, and I know Commissioner Solomon was able to attend. Were other commissioners able to attend that? No. Okay. Well, I'm mostly here looking at this project and thinking that, you know, the Goleta Water District is asking residents of our community to voluntarily cut back water use 20%. And if it doesn't rain, you know, we're going to be going down different drought designations. And there may be a point where people are asked to stop watering their lawns. People are asked to make some pretty drastic cutbacks. Of course, we don't know what's going to happen, which makes it all the more difficult. We could have a huge rain year next year, and that would be great. But my concern with this project is that I think the projects that I feel the projects that I could vote to approve at this point would be, at the very least, on par with the water savings that we're asking the community to undertake right now. So even though I think this project has done a lot, obviously, I'd like to see a little bit more as far as maybe some laundry to landscape gray water systems, some real serious water reductions, and I would love to see no lawns whatsoever on this property. And again, the reason for that is just with the timing and what's going on in our community, I think it's only fair to ask new development to be on par with the water restrictions that we'll likely have to take in the larger community in the future.
Okay, so my question to you, Commissioner West, would be if the applicant were interested in entertaining a notion that of including additional water conservation measures in the mitigated negative declaration, if that would be an acceptable amendment. My question to staff, legal.
It would be a condition of approval that you could recommend to the council to ultimately decide.
Yeah, and I would absolutely support that.
Okay, so we could recommend as a condition of approval that the council consider requiring additional water conservation efforts. Okay, may I ask the applicant, is that acceptable?
Yes, it would be. And historically, the property had used, it's not using that much anymore. There was a time when they go back into their records and they research, and it was an active orchard. So today we're not using that much water. I would be willing, since much of this site gently slopes, but probably at more than, I think, 4%, and I think 4% is the cutoff for where you can put lawn, there's not a lot of places that logically would be. And I think that in the conditions in my landscape plan, I'm not supposed to have any more than 20% of the area in the buffer area number one in lawn. And I don't see an opportunity to do much of it anyway. So are you asking me to say there will be no lawn anywhere in the project? Or do I work with staff and DRB to severely limit the amount of lawn? Because there might be a couple little flat spots that would make sense in somebody's courtyard. I don't know.
Commissioner West, is it simply the lawn issue, or is it the question of the use of gray water, to consider the use of these more advanced conservation measures?
Well, I don't think it's necessarily the Planning Commission's job to design this project for you, nor do I want to do that. But I'm just aware that, you know, the things that we approve could be very well being built during a time when the rest of our community is really being asked to potentially spend their own money, you know, kill lawns that they've spent a lot of money on, or do some pretty drastic things. And I just don't think that reflects well on us or your project. So that's my concern. And I'm willing to be very flexible as far as how that's actually implemented. But I didn't see anything in here actually putting a cap on the amount of lawn in Area 1. And I apologize if I missed that. But if there is that in here, maybe you can direct us to that area, that part of the, because it could be in the homeowner agreement.
You know, it is. It's in the guidelines, I believe. I could get a copy and show you.
Chair Solomon, if I could.
Yes.
I'm just a little uncomfortable with the, I mean, in that we have a project that's gone through a process and is in compliance. At this point, we're not talking about specific design. The applicant will still have to bring each one of these actual home constructions through the DRB, through that process, which will give them opportunity to go to some more of these specifics. We have no analytics in here that suggests what the use in these sites would be compared to comparable uses in sites that may be older or in a different use pattern. It's a little uncomfortable for us to put conditions of approval in here, at least for me it's uncomfortable, without knowing all the impacts of those conditions. I mean, gray water systems, we understand them, but we don't mandate those anywhere. And to implement those in a kind of a condition of approval now is of concern without knowing, have we really addressed any negative consequences of those? So,
Commissioner Onan, I think that we're not suggesting that these be offered up as conditions of approval, but that these ideas travel along with our recommendation to the City Council more as a matter of policy, as a recommendation that as we go forward, and I think as Commissioner West said, that the project, which is already sensitive to the concerns of water conservation, continue to be sensitive. And obviously, it will these properties will be approved individually, one by one, as they go through the process. And we just want to make sure that water conservation measures are attended to.
If staff may just point out, on big page 121 and 122, conditions 31 through 35, actually through 37, all relate to water use efficiency in relation to both indoor and outdoor water use. I don't know if those conditions get to some of the ideas that Commissioner West is discussing. But there is mention in here to look at and use as many sustainable water efficiency tools as possible.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I see that.
Well, Commissioner Salmon?
Yes.
I would want to make sure that any recommendation that we made did not limit the residents of these lots from growing their own food. Growing gardens, growing fruit trees, and I would hate to have it there be an unintended consequence where our recommendations for water conservation actually had the negative effect of restricting people from doing something that I think we should be actually encouraging people to do, which is grow your own vegetables and grow your own fruit. I think that that's a really positive thing for communities, and it's a positive thing for people's health. I think it adds to the ambiance of the neighborhood, that type of, gardens and orchards. So I wouldn't want us to have there to be an unintended consequence of our request for water conservation to limit that type of activity.
Thank you, Commissioner. I think the applicant may have some thoughts to share with us on these matters.
Well, I do appreciate your comments because I did provide for the ability to put in orchards, and I'd love that to stay in. These are my friends that live actually two doors down. They're not opponents. They're actually friends. But you should see the gardens and the orchards that they have. Absolutely amazing, and they bring fruit and vegetables into our entire office almost every day. So I would love to be able to continue to do that on these lots. And they're big lots. And so I'm hoping that, people will use them wisely. I sure can limit the lawn areas. Condition 35 is the one that speaks to it. So I would appreciate the flexibility, but I will come back and we will look at the landscape plans in detail with your design review board. Each and every lot.
Mr. Ridgway, actually, I have a question that harkens back to a comment that you made earlier about the properties being sold kind of intact, that they'll be completely designed, that the landscaping will be complete. Mm-hmm. And I had the same thought along Commissioner Dressler's lines about, well, what if somebody wanted to put raised beds in? Would they then be having to tear out some beautiful landscaping that you already put in, or would there be some flexibility at that very last stage as you're in the sales process?
In my design guidelines, I attempt to speak to water conservation also, but I really wouldn't want to prohibit somebody from doing exactly what you're speaking about, or adding orchards to the buffer areas, because mm-hmm. it's historically been an orchard, avocado and lemons. And so I would think that people would want to do that. I won't probably be planting the orchards. I'm going to leave those buffer areas pretty much intact, except for some of the areas Brian and I worked with the neighbors on, and my wife and I have already planted some undulating and changing of plants along the edges that we actually worked neighbor to neighbor, and some of them wanted this species and some of them wanted that species. So we have done some of that planting in the buffer area. And I will be doing some more along lot number one and then along Cambridge as well. So I'll put those buffer areas that have some visual protection in that I've spoken with the neighbors about, but I probably won't put in the orchards, and then I would hope they'd have the flexibility to do that long term. And then our guidelines speak to living within the rules. We have an association. They're going to be maintaining the roadways. They're going to be maintaining the drainage systems. So there is a entity that looks at that. So if someone were to be ripping out something 5 years down the road, he's got six other neighbors going, hey, wait a minute, what are you doing? We've got guidelines. So I don't know how to completely police somebody 10 years down the road from changing out plants, but I can do my best to put it in responsibly in the first place.
Okay.
Okay, I have one more comment.
Commissioner West.
Yes, I'm looking at number 35, which is great. I mean, obviously, you've done a lot here, and I'm happy about that. Number D, turf, or letter D, turf shall constitute less than 20% of total landscaped area if proposed under the final landscape plan. So on a one-acre site, you're looking at 35,000 square feet, more or less, minus the building footprint. 20% of 35,000 feet is 7,000 square feet. So if I'm reading this correctly, you could potentially have quite a large lawn, even though the 4% might get in the way. I guess what I'm looking for is just a little bit more teeth on that. And I hear that your intentions are good, but perhaps it will help you stick to those intentions if we had some, so we were able to bring down that number. And I'd like to see, well, I'd like to advocate for not having any turf whatsoever on this project. And I don't know how my fellow commissioners feel about that.
Commissioner Solomon, I could not support that. I have a dead lawn. When the rains come back and I bring it back, it's going to be a lot smaller than it is. I understand the issue. I think that in the long run, if we put a restriction like that, it's going to be unenforceable over the long run because the city is not going to go out and make sure that nobody ever plants a lawn there. Mm-hmm. And so it's going to create a potential conflict with neighbors because all the neighbors are going to have lawns. So it's not fair, you know, from neighbor to neighbor. And one of the standards here is that the developer here is designing this to fit in, and so I wouldn't want it to put restrictions on this that aren't are not existing for the neighbors. So I just couldn't support an absolute no turf restriction on this for the reasons that I stated.
Commissioner Warren?
If I could, I appreciate the sensitivity and I understand what you're trying to achieve by asking some additional commitments, if you will, from the development. But I would agree with Commissioner Dressler that I couldn't support that specific request, but I would even go further and say that I really can't support us from this dais as this body making design requirements perhaps even establishing policy. I see our role here as interpreting policy, requiring, making sure that policies are adhered to. There is opportunity for us as planning commissioners to influence policy making and to participate in policy making. But this isn't that instance. The issues that you're of concern with are real and need to be incorporated into how we go forward. But we're looking at a specific action today that doesn't engage these things. And I think designing or policy making from the dais on the fly is more often yields less than desirable results. So I wouldn't go along with any of those kind of things.
Well, Commissioner Arnon, thank you so much for those comments.
Can I just add one thing? I'm sorry to interrupt. That language in Condition 35 is actually taken from the general plan. So this is city-adopted policy in terms of landscaping and what we're looking for. I know what you were saying about policy, but this is the policy that we're working with, and it's applicable citywide.
Well, as you can see, we do deal with policy, in fact, but oftentimes as we do make our decisions and our recommendations going on record, we do have the opportunity to send our thoughts along. And they're not concrete, they're not policy, we're not writing anything or designing anything, in fact, but we are sending our ideas, and I think that it is reasonable to ask staff to note additional concerns. Not a condition of approval, and nothing insofar as specific as designating lawn or no lawn, but a request to continue to look for opportunities for water conservation. So it really, frankly, has no teeth in it, but it is a request for consideration of our thoughts, and that's what we're here for.
And if I could comment, I appreciate that. We were just engaged in a communication with the applicant that suggested, would you accept what was being discussed? That's not just sending our thoughts along, the comments along. That was actually looking for a concession or a stipulation. An applicant with integrity, if he stood up in front of us and said, yes, I will do that, would undoubtedly feel committed to that. We discussed from the city attorney that possibly we were talking about conditions of approval. So that's my concern. Those were my concerns. If we're sending comments along, absolutely. I understand that. But it sounded to me like we were going a little further than including comments.
Just respond to that quickly. I understand how it can seem very unfair to saddle one particular applicant with something that really is an issue that's much larger than this one development. And I see how our neighborhoods are built in a way that normalize these lawns and this water wasting behavior. But from my perspective, we are going to have to change that here in the next few years. And whether this is the big drought or the big drought comes in 10 years or 20 years, at some point, Southern California, not just Goleta, is going to have to start living a little bit more within its means as far as water goes. So though I do understand that it seems perhaps unfair to single out one particular applicant or neighborhood or individual, you know, we do have to start this somewhere. And if business as usual continues, in my mind, I think we are making a grave mistake by not putting some more teeth in some of these policies. And what I see is, when I look at the larger picture, is that every little particular board and review, no one is really taking responsibility and starting that ball rolling. So that's what I'm trying to do here, is just to start that ball rolling a little bit and look at water conservation in a more serious way, to get away from this sort of business as usual that I see landing us in a very undesirable position a few years from now.
If staff could recommend that, if there is interest in recommending to council that there are that they encourage water conservation or efficiency measures, that could be an additional motion after dealing with the project at hand. We will definitely be communicating this discussion as part of our staff report to council when they consider this item. But if you wanted to do something like this, you definitely could say in general, you know, we recommend that council look at this issue, and that would be perfectly acceptable.
Thank you, Ms. Carmen.
Commissioner Solomon.
Yes.
I could accept something like that where we go through and have, you know, vote on this project and then craft some language to forward our concerns to the council regarding water conservation policy going forward.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I have a completely sort of a redirect on questions to staff, please. And this has to do with the very late letter that came in from the Audubon Society as we were sitting down. My question to staff is, have we satisfied the requests of the Audubon Society in the mitigation measures that in the project as we are about to approve it?
Chair Solomon, commissioners, yes, their request was fairly simple, and it made sense to us to make a few word changes in the mitigation measure in the biological resources section. I think it was mitigation measure B1. Basically, the beginning of the section started off mentioning nesting bird surveys, and then it got more specific to raptors, and their point was, well, the surveys are for all nesting birds, and they're all protected under state and federal law. So we felt that that was a reasonable comment, and so we made the errata sheet that made those changes away from specifically raptors to include raptors and all nesting birds, basically.
Okay. And if you are going to make the recommendation, we would ask you to make it with the amendment to Condition 1 substituting nesting birds for changing raptors to nesting birds. I was trying to get the right.
So could we make the motion, the recommended motion with reference to the adoption of the errata?
Yes.
Okay.
Incorporating the language change in the errata. Yes,
all right.
Please.
Okay. Well, commissioners, are you ready to vote on the motion as it stands?
As I recall, there hasn't been a motion yet. But I will make one.
I guess I was asking for a motion.
Okay. I move that the Planning Commission recommend to the City of Council that to adopt the mitigated negative declaration and the mitigation monitoring reporting program approved and approve a rezone for DR from DR 1.8 to 2-R1, approve the vesting map for 7-lot subdivision referred to as Harvest Hill Ranch on Cambridge Drive, and include the change in the errata sheet that was provided to us regarding changing the language from raptors to nesting birds in the biological section conditions.
Okay. Any further discussion, commissioners? Okay, there's been a motion made by Commissioner Dreschler. Do I have a second?
I'll second that motion.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Okay, the motion passes 4-0. Thank you. Thank you very much. And I guess the other matter is, do we want to send anything else along to the City Council with our recommendation, or should we ask for a memo from staff? What's the appropriate...
Whether without a recommendation now, it will be discussed in the staff report, so they will hear about this discussion regardless.
So you'll carry our thoughts, yes? Okay. It'll be in the minutes, right?
And it'll be in the minutes.
Right.
Okay. Can I make one quick comment then?
Sure.
I would like to ask that in your staff report that, as Ms. Prossy has pointed out, that these conditions for landscaping are in the general plan. You know, one of the essential fundamental elements of the general plan is sustainable development, and that word sustainable is actually in the general plan. I would like to convey to the City Council, if my fellow commissioners can agree to this, that 20% of the total landscaped area of a proposed development is not a sustainable amount of turf. That number should be much lower. That number, of course, I would advocate for zero, but I can understand how others wouldn't agree with me. Perhaps we can recommend to City Council that that number goes down to 10%, because I think these general ideas about, oh, we should save water, and, you know, that's all fine and good, but until we start talking about specifics, it just doesn't seem very meaningful to me.
May I make a comment?
Yes.
I did make an attempt through the guidelines and our buffer plan to pretty much carve out a large percentage of the lots and designate them no lawn to begin with. So we have a much smaller area we're talking about where we could put a lawn. I'm not opposed to saying within the buffer area number one that we do go down to 10%. I'm not a big fan of lawn either. My wife and I put in a very small one, probably this big here. It's one of the prettiest spots on our property, but it's something that I can mow with an electric mower. And so I'm okay if somebody agrees that we should put a 10% of the buffer area number one to be lawn. I don't think I have enough area within any of those lots to even get to that percentage based on the slopes. Not that my slopes are big, but they're probably around 5%, and that would preclude me from putting lawn on much of the perimeter of the site. I'm just hoping maybe there's some little pockets up around the house where you put it. And so if it makes everybody comfortable that I put 10%, that would be okay with me. One other comment about the nesting birds. If there's a sparrow in a nest, does that mean I'm shut down? And is it really only when I'm grading and making big construction noise versus if I'm halfway through construction on a house and the nesting season comes and somebody points to, there's a sparrow in a nest over there, because I'm keeping most of these trees on site except for the eucalyptus trees. I'm just hoping there's some clarity on the aggressiveness of a bird in a nest.
Commissioner Solomon and Commissioner, the mitigation measure and then the condition of approval based on that is for nesting birds, which are protected. So we're obligated to protect nesting birds. So but it does relate to all construction activities, so not just grading, but also construction of the house. So, you know, that's part of the condition of approval, that the survey be provided prior to the issuance of the permit so that we know where they are, and that we know where the buffers are, and then we can get some input from the biologist who does the survey as to how best to protect those nesting birds.
But if it were a situation where my biologist came out, we did the study, I was able to get my building permit, I started building the home, it takes me 6-8 months to build the home, I come into the final time of finishing my home, putting a roof on, and I've got a sparrow nesting over in an avocado tree, that's going to be painful. If I'm shut down for 4 or 5 months waiting for the nesting season to get over, if it's just a regular bird.
We can certainly work with we'll sit down with you and go over details as to what types of birds and how this all works. It's really imperative that if this project is approved by City Council, that when this survey happens, you work very closely with your biologist as well as staff, and we will figure out the best timing if anything is found on the property.
As long as there's some reasonableness to it.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Commissioner Dressler.
I can support a motion that where we send our concerns with regard to the city's policy with regard to the appropriateness of lawn ratio area. I'm not completely comfortable with picking a random number like 10% out of the air, because I don't have any knowledge or expertise that on which that number is based. I mean, maybe it should be 5%, maybe it should be 15, you know, maybe 20% is okay. I don't have any experts here giving me evidence, showing me a presentation about, you know, this is how many gallons per square inch of lawn, and, you know, this is, these are what the guidelines should be. And I would imagine that if you're going to do a really good job on this, that it would be much more complex than just 10% or 20% or picking a number, like a percent number like that. Because somebody with a really small area would only have room for a small lawn, whereas somebody with a large area, you may want to have more complex guidelines about how much lawn they could put in. So, you know, the general concept of I think that that we should forward to the city council our concerns with the under our current conditions with the appropriateness of the current policy, I can support 100%. Picking a specific number, though, I'm not really that comfortable with.
Thank you, Commissioner Dressler. I think that thank you very much, Mr. Ridgway, for your willingness to be flexible about this. I think at this point in time, we're not really prepared to make a requirement of you of that nature.
Okay.
So if that's something that you want to entertain later or as you go through the design review board or, you know, you'll be in this process for a while, we would obviously appreciate it if you would give it some consideration. However, the document that we're working with is the ordinances that we currently have, and the city at this point is working our way through zoning changes and things of this nature will be addressed during that process. So we'll have an opportunity to look at this, but we will not tie your project up in okay. this process. Okay.
So did we come to any conclusion on Ms. West's how we send this message forward to the council?
I'm comfortable with leaving this with staff. I think everybody understands how important this is, and my final word will be that, you know, the word sustainable in the general plan could be incorporated, you know, interpreted many, many different ways, and I guess I just see myself as an advocate for giving it a little more teeth. So thank you all for talking this through with me, and I really appreciate all of your points of view, and we'll leave it. I'm fine with leaving it with staff to carry this forward to the city council, and also, as Commissioner Solomon said, we will be addressing this in the zoning changes. So thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner West. Thank you, staff. Mr. Heifeld, an excellent job with the report. Thank you very much this evening. And
okay. Mr. Ridgway, you have your approval.
Thank you.
Well, your recommendation to
yeah.
council.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Thank you
Good
very
night.
Much. So I'm required to say that
it's not appealable because it's an automatic recommendation.
Oh, okay, great.
Sorry.
So my notes are incorrect. Thank you.
Did we put that in there?
All right. Well, thank you very much to our applicant for your presentation this evening. Congratulations. Best of luck with it. And now for the director's report.
Just a reminder that Thursday is our safety training in Planning Commission chambers, or in Council chambers, excuse me. That will, I believe it's at 6 p.m. or 5?
There's two sessions.
There's two sessions, a daytime and an evening.
2 p.m. and
6. 2 and 6.
Yeah.
So hopefully you all can make one of those. It's an important session for everyone to attend who sits on up here. Or in this room for any regular meeting. Second, there was some mention of the Goleta Water District presentation that happened at Council last week. It is available online through Granicus. Highly recommended that you all take a look at that if you have some time. The presentation was sort of more, it was a higher level presentation. It didn't get into the very specifics of the Goleta Water Plan and how it intersects with the general plan. But it does provide a lot of information about the things that the city is facing, some of the issues that Commissioner West raised about long-term sustainability with water use. But one of the things to know if you do watch their presentation is that in their water plan, the master water plan, they have accounted for all the growth accounted for in our general plan. That was a requirement. And that was something that wasn't explicitly stated during the presentation, unfortunately. So there is that intersection. It's already been considered. And then lastly, before my cough starts again, we have a lot of meetings in April. So we're looking at three. And the first one will be April 7th. We're going to be doing a follow-up on the Module 1 presentation. We're not sure of format at this time. We are considering having a slightly longer workshop like we did on the day of Module 1 because that seemed to work well. And what it would be is a dialogue to talk to the planners. So it would be me and Ann Wells here to answer questions and clarifications. What we found during the scoping hearing that we had last week for the EIR, for the zoning ordinance, there's a lot of confusion out there. And it really helped, I think, for them to really have some face time with staff and be able to talk about sort of the questions that came up, the difference between the environmental review and the actual zoning project, and just be there's specific interests all over the board. So having that face time, I think, is going to help a lot with this project. And we'll also have a formal meeting that night for you to follow up and ask any other questions. I'm realizing now that clarifying our intent is part of the process that we really need to do here. Streamlining, explaining what we mean by that, talking about what we have now, the zoning administrator discussion that had occurred, clarifying how we do have a zoning administrator now. And just some of those words that seem to have been of particular concern during the Module 1 discussion. So that's April 7th. And we'll try and make sure that we're done before the big game. So.
Okay. Ms. Carmen, a quick question. I wonder if you can provide us with an update, and maybe it's too soon, but was the beach cleanup commenced today as was discussed?
Supposed to.
I believe so. It was on schedule, and they were all supposed to come down, but I have not heard whether or not it actually they are moving forward and what they found so far.
It was supposed to.
It's been a lot of folks are out for spring break, so the words we usually hear with people running back and forth in the department, it just wasn't happening today. So, but we will verify that and check.
And if you could just satisfy my curiosity, where is the point of entry for the heavy equipment? Do you know?
I believe Wes showed me a map, and I want to say it's
there is a fire access road
down
to the beach at Haskell's. So I would suspect that that's that is more than likely the main access for heavy equipment.
Is there also a road leading from the offshore Elwood Terminal, onshore terminal?
The Venico property?
No. Well, is it Venico?
Yeah.
There's definitely a road through the Venico property, but that...
I mean, not from the EOF, but from the marine terminal.
On the other side?
On the other side.
Yeah, that could be the other access point.
I think when Ms. Wells showed me, I think that was the one they were going to use, or one of them.
Yeah,
but we can verify.
Yes, there's a lot of stuff to take out and a lot of work that they have to do. So.
It's astonishing what's on that beach right now, and it's a wonderful thing that we were able to get that coordination, that you all were able to get that coordination with the state.
And we were really pleased, the quick reaction by the State Lands Commission. They jumped on this and found money, and it was a really great response. So everything worked out.
Terrific. Thank you. Any other comments?
Yeah. If I could, I'd just like to acknowledge staff again for the timeline of working through this project. I do appreciate you having those timelines called out in the report. And it's wonderful, again, to see, speaking with the applicant, they felt like it was a long time. And, of course, any time will be a long time to them. But I can see that these things are going through our process quicker, and I think that's appreciated all through the community. So good work. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Lonnon. May I have a motion to adjourn?
I'll make a motion to adjourn.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Good night, all. Thank you.